Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Educating for Success show. We bring families together with home business.
Hey, this is Ray Perry at Educating for Success, coming to you from the backside of nowhere in southern Tennessee. Today, my co-host is Ralph Hendricks of Joy Acres Farm in Joy, Kentucky. Welcome, Ralph.
Well, thanks, Ray. It's good to be here.
It is so great to have you here. And today I want you to tell us a little bit about your journey from regular living to the farm life, the journey into rural living and the pros and the cons and the reasons why behind everything that you're doing. So I want you to start off by just giving us a little bit of an overview of why did you decide to go into hobby farming or whatever you want to call it.
Okay. Growing up, my father was in the military, so we traveled around to different places where the Army had bases, and every summer we would go visit Granny at her farm in Florida, in Crestview, Florida, actually. And my grandfather had hogs, and it was a hobby farm. I didn't know it was considered a hobby farm. I just knew my grandparents were these great farmers. And so every summer we were with chickens and we were with turkeys and we were with hogs, and that was our summers. And then the rest of the year we were in big cities. In fact, when I got married, my wife Debbie and I, we lived in Louisville, Kentucky, and then from there we moved to Nashville, Tennessee, and from there we moved to Indianapolis, and every time we moved to larger and larger cities. And now I was used to cities, and my wife, she too was used to cities living in Ohio. But when we moved to Western Kentucky in 2000, we had culture shock. We moved to a rural area where they literally rolled up the sidewalks at 8 o'clock in the evening, and the county that we moved to had two flashing lights, and that was it. And so we were immersed in the rural lifestyle. I worked for a church at the time, and we lived in the backside of an old farmhouse. It was an efficiency apartment, so my wife and my daughter, who was, I think, 5 at the time, we lived in this efficiency apartment on a horse farm. So there we were, big city people on a horse farm in the middle of nowhere, and we fell in love with the country. I had done some landscaping growing up, and so I did that as part-time jobs, and so here was my opportunity to become a vegetable farmer, and of course I failed miserably because vegetables aren't like perennials, so we're learning that process. But we moved a few places in our area, in our these little small counties, and every time we had opportunities to be on somebody's property who had several acres. So just a few years ago, I thought, I want chickens. And so I got some chickens. I thought, well, if I can sell these kind of chickens, I could make all this money. So my head was in the clouds with the money part of farming, because I would read and listen to people who said, oh, yeah, if you buy this rare breed, you could sell them for $100 a bird. Well, you know, I bought, I think, maybe 20 or 30 of a rare breed, and the neighbor dog came in and ate every one of them. So there went my $1 million down the tubes. But the farming aspect was still on the back burner for us, because we really didn't know what we were doing. But reading books like You Can Farm and Pastured Poultry Profits by Joel Salatin, and I'm so glad that he's going to be at the conference this year. But reading his books really inspired us, and so we started implementing some of the techniques and some of the things that he recommends. And we were able, actually, just last year, or maybe it was 2 years ago, to actually turn a profit by selling meat birds to friends and neighbors. So it's been several years. We've been farming for I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years now, maybe six. And each year we're trying to add something different. Last year we added bees. My wife put in some cut flowers to sell locally. And my daughter had several years ago been in 4-H, and we'd had a rabbit, so we still have rabbits now, and we're breeding those for table meat and for pets. So that's kind of in a nutshell our journey, and it's been an ups and down, but it's been fun and exciting.
Well, that is awesome. I'm so glad that you're doing that, because first of all, it's just you're following the passion that's in your heart, and I think we need to get back to our roots, and the main thing is that our food supply has been changing so much, especially here in America, over the last several years, so that it's actually not safe now. And so, have you found a difference in your diet? Have you created a difference? Have you gotten away from grocery stores so much, and are growing more of your vegetables and your meat at home for your own consumption?
Yes, we are. In fact, I don't think that we have bought a chicken in 3 or 4 years. And we have other neighbors and farmer friends, and so we actually buy our pork from an Amish family, and we sometimes trade vegetables and things. And there are oftentimes, and this is exciting about the farming, is we'll sit down at a meal, and everything on the table is something that either we grew or a neighbor has grown and has not come from the grocery store. And that's an exciting part of the farming. But the health aspect is what you mentioned. It's amazing, as we began this journey reading about health and about industrial farming and what chemicals are put into our food. Really, that became a concern for us, especially health-wise, as all three of us have kind of suffered from some health ailments over the years and realized it's due to our diet.
Yeah, absolutely. So, now, the other day you told us in an earlier podcast that you were basically on 20 acres and that you were leasing some other land. Have you built a house out there, or tell us about what your farm looks like?
Oh, we have this idyllic farm setting. It's really nice. We live just a few miles from the Ohio River up on a bluff. Now, we don't see the river from where we are, but in the early morning, if you look out across the bluff and see the tops of the trees, you can see the fog setting on the river, and so you see this fog bank just kind of winding through the trees. It's really beautiful, and it's a nice setting, and the wind blows all the time, so there's no mosquitoes. We like that. But this farm belongs to a friend of ours, and several years ago, they were looking. They actually have two houses built on it, and they needed to make a change for their family and move out. And so they contacted us, and they wanted us to come and stay on the land to make sure it was still being used and kind of keep an eye on things. So they became kind of weekend people. They'd come in and just stay for the weekend in their big house. But our house is the old pole barn that they had converted several years ago into a house. So we actually live in a barn. And it's got two bedrooms upstairs and a big open floor plan on the main floor. But it is set in... 25 acres is on the top of the bluff, and then about 50 or 60 acres on the lower part of the bluff. And we can use as much or as little as we want. Our friends have been very generous to us as we've rented that house from them. So we've had chickens and ducks and turkeys and bees, and we have we're trying to be vegetable gardeners, but right now it's we have the animals, but we'll get that one day. But it's a fun and exciting place to be.
Oh, that's an interesting situation where instead of going out and buying a large piece of property and living on it as an owner, you've actually set up a situation where you are renting from a landowner so that you are able to do all the things that you want to do without actually owning the property. So that's awesome. I remember Joel Salatin talked about that in one of his earlier talks at our conference from a couple years ago, where he said, ask yourself what you want to do and then figure out how to make it happen. And sometimes it doesn't mean that you have to go out and buy the thing. It might be that you can rent or lease or barter or swap or do something. So it sounds like you've made a creative arrangement with the people that actually own the property.
Yes, we have, and I thank Joel Salatin for the idea, because there's no way that we could have gone out and bought 20 acres or gosh, even one. And what we've done, and it's in his books, we've made everything portable. The chicken coop is portable, the rabbit hutches are portable, the beehives are portable. Everything is portable except for what's growing in the ground. But even then, you know, we planted about 10 blueberry bushes. When we go, and we have been told that it's possible they might sell the property, but see, everything right now is portable. We can dig up those blueberry bushes and take them with us. And so as we're thinking about, well, what about the future? Where might we live? We have other friends who have acreage, and they've already told us, sure, put your chickens here. Sure, put your bees there. So being portable and not tied to the land, we're one up on things. So when we move, our farm will move, and we may not miss anything as we do that movement. So that's pretty neat, part of what Joel Salatin teaches and what he's going to teach when he's at the conference.
That is an awesome concept. So now, is there something in particular that you're looking for? Are you ready to start looking for your own place, or are you pretty much satisfied to be right there as long as the place is available?
Well, we are satisfied with where we are, but we know that the Lord will move us whenever and however. So we are presently, we are thinking for the future where we might go and how things would go. But, you know, we even made our farm name portable. Now, we're located outside of Joy, Kentucky, population 400, counting the 300 hound dogs. But Joy Acres Farm will be Joy Acres Farm no matter where we go. So we've even made the name portable.
Oh, that's a great concept. So do you do anything like composting?
Yes. We compost and we have our own. We save wood and salvage items that we can reuse on the farm. We recycle just about everything that we have or anything that we can get our hands on, and so that keeps our farm costs down as well. So with our composting, with the rabbits and with the chickens do most of the work. In fact, I put a 2.5 or 3 foot pile of compost in the chicken yard, and I just let them have at it. And in just a few days, they had it turned, and so the chickens are my labor force on the farm right now.
That's great. So so what about fencing or anything that you might do that seems like it's kind of semi permanent? Have you had to invest in anything like that that you might not be able to take with you when you move on?
Right now we're focused on only investing in what we can take with us. So that's what we're doing. Was that your question?
Yes,
did
right.
Okay.
So I think you mentioned yesterday also that your wife your wife has an herb garden. Tell me more about that.
Oh, yes. Now, I told you that, you know, I cut my teeth on ornamental landscaping. So I can do landscape design, I can put in bushes, I can prune trees, and I can do all that frou-frou stuff that people like in their yards and on their lawns. But when it came to gardening vegetables, I'm clueless. I know more now than I did before, but really the vegetable gardening, I like the idea, but actually doing it and learn, I didn't. I'm lost on it. So you're going to have to teach me how to do some of those things. But my wife has always liked herbs. She likes them for cooking. She likes them for medicinal reasons, and she just likes the way they look. And so whenever we'd put a vegetable garden in, she claimed a corner for herbs. So she's growing thyme and oregano and lavender and gosh, all sorts of things. And this year we had to move the garden, so we dug up everything that she had, and what survived we actually made into like a little French knot garden kind of thing with the oregano. And so what she does is she'll use the oregano for herbs, and she likes to share. So sometimes when she has excess, she'll dig it up and she'll give it away to friends and trade it. But we have also tried to sell some of the herbs, you know, bundle them up as maybe a culinary sachet and you know, little bit of nice twine and a little label and just sell them for a dollar or just a couple of dollars with some of the things that we've put out. So her herb garden is doing fantastic. Now my vegetable garden is growing a lot of grass and weeds, but it's growing.
Well, that is awesome. So have you been canning and freezing and putting up the vegetables that you get in for the winter?
Well, that's the next step. We are new at the canning and, well, vegetable gardening, but the canning and putting things up. But any excess we do have, it ends up in a Ziploc bag and in the freezer. So my wife really wants to learn how to do canning, so she's talking to people and looking for classes on that with the extension office.
Okay. And do you have a wood stove? Do you heat?
Yes. We heat with wood through the winter. So during the off season of winter, we're looking for wood and splitting wood and putting it back. And last year the winter was kind of mild where we were, so we didn't have to use as much wood, but we are in the process of getting more wood.
That's great. Well, that's one of the things that I have so loved about having woods out behind me. We have 35 acres of woods on my property, and we can just literally go out there with a chainsaw and cut down a tree, and then in the fall, after it's been cured, you can just totally heat your house with it. And we have a wood heater that's connected into the central unit, so that makes it even more efficient, so we can use either one if we want to. So I've loved being able to use the resources that God has put on the earth in order to heat the house. And I've got plans for putting in an external unit that would possibly even cool the house in the summertime. I haven't gotten that aggressive yet. That would be a lot more work, but I've got plans to do that in the future. But I just love the feel of living in the country. It's just so different from living in town when you have a house and you stay inside the house all the time and your entire life is inside. There's just something that's awesome and freeing and wonderful about getting outside into the fresh air, no matter what it's like, because right now it's probably 100 degrees outside. So I go out in the morning, early in the morning, around 6 or 7, and go get things done in the cool of the day when it's still fairly cool, and then late at night when it's cooled off. But of course here in the South we have a humidity problem, but there's just something about being outside and being in nature and being around real stuff that just makes you feel alive, and it makes me feel closer to God. I just love to go walk in the woods to be able to get closer to God. And several years ago we decided to move to the country, and I had no idea how much it was going to impact my life and my relationship with the Lord when we did that. And so I'm so thrilled that we made that move years ago. And we haven't taken advantage of all of the things that our property can do for us here lately. I only have 2 children left at home, and so they have other interests rather than doing some of the things that I would really like for them to go do. But we do get a lot done. We have a garden, and we have a couple animals and all. But it's just a fun experience, and I just feel like there's a movement of people wanting to move back to the country a little bit and getting away from the city. And mainly I think that the number one reason would be to be able to grow your own food and know where it comes from. Are there any other reasons other than that, Ralph, that you decided to move out into the country?
Well, we love all those reasons that you've said. And the other one that we were interested in is, since we homeschooled, my daughter will be 20 now, so we slowed down on homeschooling a little bit, but we decided that living in the country and having gardens and raising animals was a great teaching opportunity for our daughter, and teaching her a strong work ethic and helping her learn responsibility and realizing where her food comes from, and respecting that and understanding the life cycle of everything, and then and knowing that God provides through His creation. So those are some of the other reasons, and I know those are probably the same reasons that you enjoy living out in the country. But we really like the way that it has enhanced our ability to homeschool our daughter. And I'm excited about things that we've learned from Joel, and I hope that he'll speak about them again at the conference, and that is, people that can't move out into the country like we have, that even in urban settings, people are using these techniques and for urban farming. I just recently watched a YouTube about a farmer in Australia who has maybe a quarter acre, and he produces enough vegetables on a quarter acre to have a small like farmer's market type of thing where people are buying from him, and he's providing for his family on a quarter acre farm. Or the people in like Nashville, I wish I could remember that farm's name, but they are really, they're just a few miles from downtown Nashville, and they are in an urban area, and they're keeping herbs and flowers and vegetables and rabbits. So this type of farming, people don't have to go to the country to do it. They could actually do it in their backyard or their front yard or their side yard if they're in an urban setting.
That's true. Also, they can use the top of their building, too, because I know there's several restaurants that have buildings that are multi-stories, and the top is a flat roof, and so they have put power gardens on the roof, and the first
yes,
thing that they...
that's right. Yeah, that's great. In fact, there's a whole green roof industry out there where people are putting units together, little modular units, and covering flat parts of the roof with either just grass or vegetables or some kind of perennial, and it catches the rainwater, and it provides cooling for the building. And then for restaurants, it provides a source of produce. So if people want to do it, there are other people doing it, or they can figure out a way to make it unique for their own setting. And that's what I like about farming, because it's not cut and dry. It's whatever works for you and in your setting, and it works. It's fun.
Absolutely. So what is the main problem that you've discovered?
Well, our main problem is, as much as we like to grow things in the ground or raise chickens or raise rabbits or turkeys, all these things, bees, our main problem is that's the easiest part. The hardest part is marketing. So I am struggling with making letting people know where I am, who I am, what we're about, and what we have available. So I'm trying to read and understand about marketing. So one of the things about people who are trying to do this as an income, it's not only do they have to be a farmer, but they also have to be a marketer, a PR person. And so those are some skills that that people will need to know, or even what Jennifer teaches with social media. You need to know how to get out there and let people know who you are. And I still haven't figured out the Facebook thing, but We do have Joy Acres Farm. We have a page on Facebook about us, but I'm still trying to figure out, well, how do you reach the most people? What do you put on there? So those are some of the hardest things that we're doing. Now, learning how to raise chickens, well, there are books out there. There's you can go to Google University and just type in whatever question you have, and there's people that have answers. But not everybody knows how to market in a rural area or just let people know what they have and where they are.
Concept, maybe we should talk about that tomorrow a little bit, because there are so many different ways to market things these days, and of course we have the internet now, and so that would be a great topic for us to continue this conversation about tomorrow. So would you like to join me again tomorrow to talk about building community and learning how to market and do the business side?
I would love it. That would be great.
Sure, let's do it. So you also mentioned about our conference that we have coming up. That is actually our annual home business conference, which is going to be in Louisville, Kentucky this year on August 12th and 14th. It is the only conference of its kind in the whole world. It is for homeschool families, but other families are welcome to come. We don't even talk about homeschooling, basically, while we're there. Families of all kinds are welcome to attend. It's 3 days of learning from millionaire experts about a variety of different topics of ways that you can make money from home. And this year, our keynote is Joel Salatin, a farmer extraordinaire from the Shenandoah Valley in Virginia, who is a third-generation alternative farmer who has learned how to basically monetize farming in a way that no one else has. He has written books. He's a popular speaker. He has an apprenticeship program. He has all kinds of training opportunities for you to learn more from him. But he is an engaging speaker. We've had him before, and he's absolutely phenomenal. We love him. You're going to learn several other things, like how to buy land and how to sell land, from a real estate investor friend of mine who is from Germany. He is one of those rags-to-riches stories. Into this country and decided he was going to do something with his life, and he did. Didn't know anything about real estate, figured it all out, and now does very, very well, lives in Arizona. You're also going to learn about how to sell on Amazon, because there are a lot of people making a full-time living and doing very, very well with 6, 7, and now even 8 figures a year selling stuff on Amazon. So if you'd like to learn about that, you are welcome to come and learn from one of our community members at Educating for Success. You're also going to get a chance to learn more about how to do membership sites from a man who actually owns one of the platforms, one of the 5 main platforms for hosting membership sites. We also have a variety of our members at Educating for Success who are going to be sharing some of their success stories, and we're going to be learning a lot more. So you can find out everything that you'd like to about the conference at educatingforsuccess.com/2016HBC. And all that stands for our 2016 Home Business Conference. So if you'd like to learn more about that, you're welcome to go to that website. We do have a special right now. It's Independence Day week. And so instead of paying the price for one person, you can register for the price of one and bring the whole family. Yes, this is an event for the family. We have young people as young as 6. We prefer that you leave the little kids at home that are 6, but we have 2/3 of our audience between the ages of 6 and 20, and so we would love for you to bring your young people if they are interested in learning how to have their own home business, because that's one of the things that we teach that you should be doing with home education, is give your children the opportunity to explore home business. It's not the direction that they go rather than pursuing a job. It is an option. It's so fun, and it's a very viable thing to do. Plus, we have country dancing every night, so you don't want to miss that. So if you'd like to join us, just check out that webpage at educatingforsuccess.com/2016HBC to learn more about our conference. Ralph, it was absolutely marvelous having you here today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, and I look forward to tomorrow, and I look forward to seeing you in Louisville in August.
Great. And thank you all for joining us. This is Ray Perry signing off.
Thank you for joining us. To learn more about what we do at Educating for Success, visit us at educatingforsuccess.com.